This week on the Nittany Dispatch, we have our takeaways from James Franklin's weekly press conference, which will have a new day moving forward. We talk about the wide receiver room and why maybe there's been some underwhelming play there. And then we preview the Maryland game this Saturday, this week on the Nittany Dispatch. Hello and welcome to the Nittany Dispatch. I am John Sauber, Penn State beat reporter from the Center Daily Times. She is Audrey Snyder of The Athletic. Audrey, happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween, John. You've got a lot of energy right now. It sounds like you just like might have downed some Skittles before this. Listen, like I did.
There were Skittles. There were Starbursts. Also, James Harden got traded at 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. As a Sixers fan, that's a big day for us. So.
Yeah,
true. This is the one thing we can agree this on in the world of sports.
One team. And I actually, John, which brings us into a perfect segue, because what I learned today at James Franklin's news conference on Tuesday is that he's taking fashion advice from you, and I've never been more concerned about the guy.
Can't say I blame him. Those who are watching on YouTube may be able to see I have the City Edition City of Brotherly Love shirt from last year's Sixers team. The hoodie. Yeah, it's a great hoodie. I have I said today at the press conference, James mentioned it because he saw me in it, that the last time I wore it, I think it might have been at, I want to say it was when we were in Disney for the Rose Bowl that first day
Disneyland, yeah. Running down Main Street, yeah, that was a day.
I threw the hoodie on the bus on the way there, but said that he was going to get himself one today. Said he got himself one. I let him know that I actually have a second now too. I got the pullover as well, but.
So yeah, you and James are pretty much twins, John, and that brings me to my next.
To be clear, though, if you want to wear hoodies, joggers, and shoes, I'm your guy. Like this is right up my alley. But outside of that, do not.
Last week, he mentioned about your Roback hat.
Yes.
So I don't. There's something going on with you and James there, and it's making me a little uncomfortable because you sit behind me at the presser, and
I wear nice things. You know, what do you want?
I mean, I guess we don't have to worry about James Franklin buying any of my outfits. If he buys any tops, then we've got a different story. But John, James opened the door today, and I'm kicking myself because I didn't follow up because it was asked so early on. He started off about Halloween and he couldn't remember the phrase trick or treat. And he's like, we had our Halloween party on Monday night. Like, what do we call that? We're like a trick or treat, like in the building, you know, with the staffs and their families. But then he said, and I pulled up the quote, he goes, I took my costume off because I didn't think that would go over well, or it would go over too well. And then they all go to dinner together. Monday's family night. They go to training table, which brings me to my question, which no one followed up on, and we should have. What the hell was James Franklin's Halloween talk?
So listen,
I have two ideas. I have two that I think are pretty good ideas.
I'm curious, and I am vowing to you and to the listeners, mm-hmm. I will bring this up tomorrow at the practice presser, whether it's before or after. We will find out what the costume was. Before we get too deep into it, though, don't forget, rate, review, subscribe, all of that good stuff. Always helps us out on Apple Podcasts, on YouTube. Hit that subscribe button below. But no, I'm curious what your thoughts are, because I was unable to, I couldn't really, I heard, like, he said it, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I thought we were going to talk about it later. And it just never got brought up again. And I forgot about it by the end because I had the last question of the presser.
Yeah, I didn't feel like it was a perfect pivot because I was asking about Mike Yurcich and play calling. So a little more serious subject. I didn't want to, you know. But here are my two theories, John. My one theory is that maybe he went dressed as you because of the hoodie. But I don't think that's likely. My second theory, and this is based off of nothing other than my gut, my guess. Maybe James having more of a sense of humor than we give him credit for. What if, John? What if he went as a Michigan spy?
Listen,
think about it. You could change out of that. The guy probably doesn't own a Michigan shirt, though. But, like, does James Franklin use Amazon? Would he be able to get a shirt?
It fits the description. Like, it fits the description of it wouldn't go over well or it would go over too well.
Really well,
like,
yeah.
Because, listen, that's a funny costume. There's no denying that.
Somebody in the student section did it the other day.
Yes, I think two people did.
Probably. I'm willing to bet we're going to see a lot of those, and there probably were a lot of them out around downtown. Easy costume, low maintenance, but like...
Well, now the costume looks different, though, right? Because now you got to get the Central Michigan.
You got to get a lot of different outfits.
Central Michigan polo, the hat, the sunglasses for a night game. This is the gift that keeps on giving. I am very happy for colleagues on the Michigan beat. I'm sure they're very much enjoying themselves and very busy right now. But no, this is genuinely one of the funnier college football stories I can remember. And if that really was Connor Stallions on the sideline of Central Michigan sidelines during a Michigan State game, boy, this is going to be very interesting to track.
You know, we've got Dabo and a fan going at it on their radio show. We've got the Michigan stuff. You know, John, it's nice to not kind of be the center of the scandalous college football universe. I mean, it's kind of nice over
just
here.
Bystanders.
Here we are almost in November. By the time you're hearing this, it will be November. I'm a little bit hung up on this Halloween costume thing. And so I got to know what he went as. I was even looking it up. I remember James Franklin's first year here. His whole family, they went as like the Incredibles. So there's that.
That's a good costume idea.
Then there's, and actually, it's really jarring. If you pull up the photo and look at it, everyone looks so much younger, right? Because I mean, that was 2014.
It was.
I'm sure, I'm sure I looked a lot younger in 2014 too.
I was a freshman in college, just as we continue the John ages you.
You probably looked the same, John. You probably looked exactly the same. Probably had a different color Sixers hoodie on.
I did not have a beard then. I could not grow a beard until college, and then have had a beard since then, but yeah, wore my contacts more often. So yeah, very different look for me at 19 years old than the current one.
I do want to ask one of these times, and the fact that it's never come up and we're in year 10, maybe it never will, but James Franklin, there's that image where it's like the creepy tiger, like face paint thing. You ever saw that one? Cause the first time I ever saw that photo, I was like, this has to be a Photoshop. And I was like, no, this is real.
I don't know the backstory behind it, but it looked like it was at like a kids county
thing,
fair or something.
Yeah, like maybe a kid's birthday party or something. Yeah. I don't know. But John, it is a busy week around here. Despite Halloween, you and I breezing through this before all the neighborhood children are pounding on our doors.
That's
We've got
right.
the candy waiting at the door because we will not be those people who sit inside with their lights shut off. This is a big night.
That's right. And my wife especially will be outside, handing candy out.
Did you dress the dog up? Is that the...
No. The dog is with my wife's parents tonight just because he's a little skittish around, when people knock and everything still. But this is a full-size candy bar household. We do Halloween right around here. It's a busy time. And of course, we have the college football playoff rankings. The first ones come out tonight, which will be interesting.
John, Well, I'm not even going to ask. I'm just going to complain about this. Like,
go on a rant.
The people who make the schedules, and I don't want to – I probably shouldn't say this, but I will. It sounds like there was some man somewhere who didn't look at the calendar and was like, Tuesday, end of the month, we always do it then, got to do it. And then I think probably that same man was like, early signing period, December, let's do it right before Christmas. Like, it is just – this calendar is horrible. And the good news for us is like Penn State tonight, the rankings really don't mean anything because unless they beat Michigan, like the ranking will not matter. But this calendar is insane and it only gets crazier once you get to December. And then at that point, it's like, I feel for all these parents where it's like, oh, the coaches are coming to our house tonight and it's December and we're freaking out and it's the holidays and like a million different things. Like the calendar is only going to get worse. But yeah, when that came out tonight, I know a lot of people were angry about it and rightfully so, but the college football playoff, they don't care about the holidays. They don't care about our lives. Now moving forward, James Franklin's weekly presser will be on Mondays. That's a little bit of a programming note just so he can flip the page to the next opponent sooner. So starting next week, the Michigan week presser will be Monday at noon instead of Tuesday at 12:30. So if you follow along to these things, if you watch it anywhere, if you, watch us live tweet it. Just know that there will be a programming note. But Maryland week, John. Now that's, I think those are all of my rants and my aggressions out, I think.
Good. That's always good. I'm always good for a good rant, and it's nice to see you contribute on that end as well. Mm-hmm. Big fan of the rant, personally. But no, this was an interesting press conference. A lot of talk about the offense. All that candy's getting to me. We talked a lot about wide receivers. Listen, that's my kryptonite right there. Love me some sour Skittles. We talked a lot about the wide receivers, talked a lot about the offense. You asked specifically about Mike Yurcich, and he gave, I think, a kind of telling answer to me, reading between the tea leaves. Like, this is, and I think we knew this, that James wasn't going to make a decision on this in season, like just never going to work that way for him.
This isn't the Brian Ferentz situation,
which I'm still mad about. Like, what you want to hear a rant? Like, the drive to 325 is so much fun for everyone to follow in college football. We all know they weren't getting there and that he was going to end up, you know, being fired for it because, you know, he has the job because he's Kirk Ferentz's son. That's the only reason he had it in the first place. But he was going to be fired because he didn't get to 325. Announcing this in late October just takes all the fun out of watching Iowa's putrid offense, which I've said on this podcast before. Like, I watch
it. You love it.
Like, yes. And, like, part of that was the drive to 325, and now, you know, you don't even have that. The over-under for Iowa-Northwestern this weekend, 29.5. It's a record low, I believe. Yeah. And I honestly, there's no under too low for that game. I think
that's a decision, right? You have to make because you're getting pressure from higher ups, right? Yes. Like, you don't just make that now and kind of let it linger. Like, you had pressure, so you make that decision. But yeah, continue on Penn State's offense.
Yeah, no, I think Franklin's answer about Yurcich was telling, kind of towing the line to me anyways. That was my interpretation of, like, they want to wait to the end of the season to evaluate such things. You know, there are mitigating circumstances. He mentioned the wide receivers, you know, and a lot of factors there. But I'm curious, since you asked the question, what did you think of his response?
Well, and my premise for the question, I said, you know, I kind of built it up and said, you know, like, obviously we are where we are in this season. Like, we've played a good chunk of it. But given the fact that you have a young quarterback, the fact that you've got this developing, I was trying to put it nicely, this receiving core that's been a mess, this changing, developing receiving core, the offensive line has been really kind of spotty. So I said, how would you evaluate the job that Mike Yurcich has done, given all these factors? And he said, I've got the quote in front of me here, so I don't mess it up. He said, I think when you take all those factors in, I think there's a lot to evaluate, right? The depth and the consistency at wide receiver, how we're using our tight ends, the run game, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then the other thing he did say, and he said that, you know, like, at this point, he goes, here it is. I think you have to factor all these things in. I think for the most part, I feel good. Obviously, we'll dig into all these things after the season, meaning the statistics, the numbers behind this offense. I'm not in the business of midseason or three quarters of the season getting into evaluations of the staff. I don't think that's appropriate. I don't think that's the right thing when we're focused on Maryland this week. Well, I take that, John, as it's also not really a ringing endorsement either, right? Like, that's not. And I think, you know, James Franklin's responses have been consistent when he's been asked about this offense. And I think he's been consistent when he's been asked about the receiving core, and that clearly there's a lot of things there that aren't materializing, and that the practices are what they are, and that's why they don't have confidence playing a lot of these guys. It certainly sounds and seems that way. But yeah, to me, it's like the offense is what it is. Interestingly enough, one of my editors pointed this out to me, that James's response about, like, three quarters of the way into the season was kind of a similar answer to the Kirk Ferentz response on Brian Ferentz. So, again, I don't think it means anything. I just think it's kind of like James said, you know, overall, yeah, they're good with it. He pointed to some of their positive statistics, but he also acknowledged today kind of the things that have been continuous problems, right? They're not explosive enough. The receiving core kind of is what it is. So I think we maybe gleaned a little bit out of it. But I do think now with the receiving core, we asked for an injury update today, and he said there's no injury update on Harrison Wallace. Which, John, since we're fluent in this special injury, yes, Franklin knowledge, this language, like, to me, that means it's not a season-ending injury, or at least at this point, they don't believe it to be season-ending, because otherwise he would say that. But, I mean, bottom line, this receiving core, it is what it is. And, I mean, Harrison Wallace, last we saw him, he had his right arm in a sling. We'll see at practice Wednesday night if there's anything different there. But I think you have to anticipate moving on with Malik McClain and Dante Cephas, and then you are what you are, right? Like, I don't think much is going to change on that front.
Well, and it was interesting when I asked him about potentially not having Trey Wallace, did they feel like they're in a spot to trust a second receiver? Would they have to make changes? And I got the sense from his answer that they're probably not going to have Wallace this week. Again, this is my conjecture based on the way he answered the question, the way he answered other questions. And again, we did see him in a sling on Saturday.
When he was answering your question, John, I was still too taken aback that he's taking your fashion advice. So I kind of zoned out when he was answering the question. So
that's fair. The good news, it's easy to find on the transcript. It's all the way down there at the bottom. But the way he answered it made me think that, you know, that they will probably not have Wallace this week. Again, we don't know that for certain. I'm not reporting anything or anything like that. We'll find out, like you said, a lot more tomorrow when we go to practice, if he's there, if he's participating, what have you. That'll be, you know, something to monitor that I'm sure you and I will both be tweeting out potentially, you know, Wednesday night, which that has not moved. That will still remain on Wednesday night as far as we know.
You know what I'm just waiting for? Like, because you and I and like everyone who does these kinds of jobs, and I'm sure this is true in many walks of life, like, we don't really know what day it is. We just know, like, James Franklin talks, so it must be Tuesday. We're at practice, it must be Wednesday, right? Radio show must be Thursday night. I am apologizing in advance because I know I'm going to say in my press conference, James Franklin said Tuesday. James Franklin said, like, the media met Tuesday. Like, it's just, I'm going to have to work on this. I gotta reprogram. What do they say? Flush it and move on so I get ready to go 1-0 next week.
I think I did this, if I remember correctly, during the bye week, we only talked to James on Wednesday, but it was the first time we had talked to him. And so I'd written something and I was used to like putting Tuesday. And so like I put that it was Tuesday, despite the fact that it was Wednesday. Cause like, oh, we talked to James for the first time. This is Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be the same. So, and then what always throws me for a loop is when they play on like a Friday. Yes. Right. So who knows what happens, because usually everything gets bumped up a day. So when they're playing on Friday, on Black Friday, if they think they're coming for my NFL Sunday, John, bad chance, baby. Not happening. Yeah. I will be on Zoom so fast. No, I think they would probably at that point keep it, I would assume, Monday. But who knows? That's like
really far in the weeds. But the nice thing about that is that it's ostensibly like they would have had it on Tuesday, which is what they usually did up until next week anyways. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how much that like actually would change by the end of the year, because
they come for my NFL Sunday. I will ask like the most unhinged question ever as I listen, watch the Packers, you know, before me. Yeah,
based on our travel plans, I don't miss my NFL Sundays. Even
we
if
are sacred leaving, NFL Sunday people. Yes,
that's right. Even if it means leaving Maryland at 11 p.m. at night on Saturday. But back to Maryland, we talk about the wide receivers. This is going to be a chance for Penn State once again to find somebody. And I know like it feels like we talk about this a lot. It's kind of the whole thing at this point, right? Like it feels like their success the rest of the season hinges on, are any of these wide receivers good enough to be a number two receiver, a number three receiver even? Dante Cephas, Caden Saunders, Malik McClain, Malik Mega, like all of these guys. I think we found out on Saturday, like Malik McClain played a ton of snaps. I don't think Malik McClain's going to be the guy. I think he's a good downfield threat. And you kind of.
But then who is the guy, John? If Malik McClain's not the guy,
you're going back to
conductor of the Dante Cephas hype train.
Yes.
So I guess maybe now.
And now Caden Saunders too. But I think.
Like, okay. So can we start to unpack this? Because this is something I've been asked a lot. I wrote about it, looked at the snap counts on Sunday, and I had more about this in The Athletic. When you look at the snap counts from Saturday, Omari Evans, Caden Saunders, Liam Clifford, they're kind of the big three that did not have a snap with the offense on Saturday, right? So Liam Clifford playing special teams. So you look at that and you say, well, okay, Malik McClain got all these snaps. Dante Cephas got all these snaps. Why are they not willing to try some of these other guys, right? Because we heard so much in the spring about Omari Evans and, you know, his skill set. Caden Saunders, four-star prospect, a lot of upside there. He finally started to feel like he got his body right this year, his body composition, all those types of things. Well, James Franklin was asked about that today, and essentially his response was, it's the consistency, it's the practice piece, right? That it's until you kind of get these guys together that they clearly do not feel comfortable putting some of these guys in games. But to me, John, and this is where, again, we don't see practice all the time. I get that, Rick. Like, I'm not trying to push back on that. But my thinking is some guys perform better in games than they do in practice.
Yes.
You're at this point in the season. It's been going on long enough. Like, cut some of these guys loose and see, right? Like, maybe Caden Saunders will look better. Now, the other part of this is James Franklin mentioned, you know, there's missed assignments and there's things that it's hard for us to see why they took a guy out because we don't know what his responsibility was on that particular play. So I get that. They grade everything. They evaluate everything. Like, I do understand not trusting putting these guys on the field. But at the same time, what you have and have been putting out there hasn't been good enough either. So, you know, at what point do you maybe try some different combinations? And I feel like if they are not there now, they're never going to get there probably the rest of the season.
This is their last chance to get there because
Saturday? You saying Saturday?
Yeah. Yeah, because you have to do it by Maryland or by Michigan, right? Like, mm-hmm. otherwise, because this is going to shock some people. I think they're going to beat Rutgers and Michigan State, and I don't think they have to worry
hot
about
take. Stuff spicy hot right take now. Right there.
But no, I think you know, James mentions a lot about stuff we don't see, right? The lack of consistency in practice, maybe, you know, how they're doing in practice, missed assignments and stuff like that. And I think at some point, the cost or the benefit has to outweigh the cost from that standpoint when the guys who are hitting are consistent, mm-hmm. like consistently doing what? I don't know. But like getting their assignments right, like maybe you sacrifice like a missed assignment or two for the fact that something.
Which we say that now happen. And then Aller throws a pick because of that missed assignment. Yeah, they're not on the straight. Like,
yeah, but I think at some point, like, it's the only way you beat Michigan is if you come out and you figure out that one of these receivers is the guy. And like, listen, if an interception against Maryland costs you that game, that's a whole other shoe, right? Like, they should win this
you
game
should
on
not
Saturday.
Be in a one possession game with Maryland.
Yeah. And so like, this is a situation where they just need to find out. And I think waiting until maybe the bowl game or, you know, Rutgers or Michigan State or what have you, that point is too late. And I just think like Saunders is the one that I continue to go back to. We saw Cephas get a ton of snaps on Saturday. Right. And
yeah, actually I just pulled these up, John. So I have them in front of me, per True Media. Keandre Lambert Smith, of course, led the receiving corps, 65 snaps. Malik McClain with 59. And again, these are just for the offense. Malik McClain, 59. Cephas, your guy, 40. Harrison Wallace, the third, of course, before the injury, he played 8 snaps. And then Malik Mega got 4 with the offense, which is still surprising considering Mega is pretty much a special teams guy. So that's, you know, that kind of interesting to me. But yeah, I just, at some point I'm with you. Like, to me, the Caden Saunders is the interesting one. And like Amari Evans, I don't know what's happened.
I have no
idea
what happened there.
It sounded like, if I'm recalling correctly, in the preseason, there was a bit of a early season, maybe like an injury issue. He wasn't fully healthy, I believe, is what they kind of alluded to at one point. But then we just haven't seen him. And at this point, I'm like, I think you just have to, you've got so many of these other guys right in that cluster. And no one is separated at this point. So to me, it's like to continuously run out there who you're going to run out there. And Franklin even said it today. He's like, you know, like maybe I come in here Saturday after the game and we're talking about one of these guys finally breaking out. And like, you guys are finally writing something different because someone has broken out. But it just, man, it is baffling.
We'll take a short break from the podcast today to tell you about the good people at Voodoo Brewing Company in State College. Voodoo Brewing Company, located at 201 Elmwood Street, a place that you and I frequent quite frequently, if I had to say.
We are frequent frequenters of Voodoo Brewery. John, the atmosphere there is unparalleled in State College. I think that you've got a really, really pretty setting there, which I enjoy. A nice change of scenery. Sometimes I may even take the laptop there and do a little work.
Listen, that's one of my favorite places. Yeah, like when, you know, when you kind of get writer's block, I think, I think probably more than people realize. And I just like need to not be sitting in the same place. So I'll go take my laptop down, even if it's like 1 p.m, 2 p.m, as long as they're open. I go inside there, sit with my laptop, plug it in. And it's nice. Like, you have, if you want to sit outside and work, like the stream is right there. You can, you know, it's a nice, like the nature-y feel to it. Right. Which I always appreciate. And, you know,
big outdoors guy.
Yeah, no, but that outdoors,
but
yes.
Pretty soon.
Other outdoors. Yeah. Pretty season. Soon. That's right. With it getting cold, Voodoo will have fire pits available soon. Fire pit season, always one of my favorite times of the year. Of course, they have the Voodoo Kitchen there now, too, as well. to, you know, get all of your food there while you're drinking, which is always a great time. But, you know, there's more than just work stuff. Yeah. Yes. There's more than just work stuff. Obviously, we go down there and work sometimes, but they also have Tuesdays and Thursdays can be a lot of fun too. Tuesdays, they have their pub trivia. Thursdays, they have bingo, which again, someday, I promise you, I will
maybe win. Maybe that should be like our off-season goal. We're going to go to bingo every Thursday until we win.
Yeah, until we win. And that'll just retire at that
point. And then we'll flip the trivia and go every Tuesday.
That's right. And then I will just get obliterated at that, unless it's sports trivia, in which case we'll have a shot there.
We got a shot.
Without a doubt, we do. But no, it is one of our favorite places to go. Voodoo Brewing Company, located at 201 Elmwood Street in State College.
And I'll be honest, I had forgotten about this angle. Just like, obviously, I knew Josh Gattis was at Maryland, but I just, you know, you get so kind of in the bunker with Penn State and in the weeds of covering this team that James Franklin mentions it today. And I'm like, oh, yeah, his first wide receivers coach. Now we're on receivers coach number 5 here during the James Franklin tenure at Penn State. And Josh Gattis, of course, with Mike Locksley at Maryland. They were together at Alabama. And you just kind of look at it and you say, okay, and Maryland is Caden Prather, who Penn State wanted to try and get, the West Virginia transfer, couldn't finish it. So you say, okay, well, if you, and I was looking at the numbers today, if you take Caden Prather's numbers, they're similar to Keandre Lambert-Smith, right? So you say, well, maybe this would have been your kind of 1A, 1B, or your option number 2 here. But instead, this receiving core is what it is. Josh Gattis is now the OC at Maryland. And for Penn State, it's like the wheels keep turning. But I do think, John, we're at the point in the year where Penn State needs to have a solution, not just for this year, because, like, I think you are what you are, but what do they do about this receiving core next year, right? Like, that's, to me, is the other thing, is, like, we can't point to it and say, absolutely, they're going to be better next year. Here's why. And I don't want to alarm people, but it might even potentially be more bleak if Keandre Lambert-Smith, and we don't know what he's going to do, but if he's not here, I don't know. I mean, I think it gets really interesting.
There is a very real scenario where the best receivers on the roster next year are Dante Cephas and Trey Wallace. Yeah. And like, unless someone else steps up, unless someone else shows that they can play or does what they have to do in practice or from a consistency standpoint or what have you, this offense is going to be abysmal next year too. Like, there's no guaranteed solution outside of like hitting a home run in the portal and finding someone that's going to come in right away and dominate and like be that number one.
I mean, honestly, because that's what they thought. And like, I thought that's what they were getting with Dante Cephas too. And I do think the timing of that still hurt them, right? That he couldn't get here for spring ball still has an impact. Because to me, it still looks like Drew Aller does not trust the guys that he's throwing to. And like, there's that hesitancy there. And I think that's why we see so many of these checkdowns, or at least part of why we see that. Because James Franklin even said today, like, he's pleased with Drew's development, right? And he said that several times. And again, because you start to hear similar lines or at least like similar phrases. And he said, you know, like, again, kind of like, we need to help Drew out a little bit more. Some of the other guys around him need to make some plays. And he did say, he's like, yes, Drew needs to be better. He needs to be more consistent. But so do the guys around him. And that's where I think, going back to my question about Mike Yurcich, like, that's where it's so interesting to try and figure this thing out, because how much of this falls on the players and how much of it falls on the play calling? And I think it's a little bit of both right now.
Yeah, but I do think a lot of this, like, it seems pretty clear that James is not blaming Drew, right? And he's right. He needs to get better. Like, there are areas where Drew Aller has to improve. But I think it seems clear that my interpretation of what James has said is that it's mostly schematic, wide receivers, separation, those types of things, more so than anything Drew is doing incorrectly. I do think, like, so when I asked about the personnel thing, like, potentially trying 13 personnel, right, getting Khalil Dinkins out there, which
you're really going for some Iowa stuff here, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, but that's the thing. Like, when they're down to essentially one receiver that they trust, like, what are you going to do, right? Like, you're going to put Cephas out there or McClain out there consistently? I don't think McClain is the answer. Like, he just struggles to separate. He's had some drop issues in the past. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a long strider, which it's not conducive to him doing well in intermediate short routes. But I think, like James said, that like, they do have the ability to play more 12, which helps. And, you know, there's ways to take advantage of that, but I just think the more you have two tight ends on the field, the less opportunity you're going to create for your guys to create the space they need to on routes, because inherently tight ends are just not as athletic as wide receivers, right? And now they're usually covered by guys that are also aren't as athletic as cornerbacks, but the separation is still harder to get. It's harder to achieve. And I think they need to like find a way to be an 11 personnel team. I know they've leaned really hard into 12 personnel this year. They've leaned really hard into having those two tight ends out there. Theo Johnson and Tyler Warren are both starting level tight ends of the Big Ten. I don't think there's a doubt about that. But I think they need to find a way to get better athletes out on the field and give them a chance to do something in open space. And that's been the problem since day one this season, right? Like, I think there was some hope for Wallace and Keandre Lambert-Smith, but it's really not come to fruition. It only has for Lambert-Smith, and everyone else has kind of been, you know, it's kind of bleak, right? Like, what does the future look like for any receiver on this roster? Like, if guys aren't playing now, that means they still have another step to take in their development. And like for some of those guys that are getting older, it's like you wonder if that step in their development's gonna
is it elsewhere? Right. I think is the other part of that, right?
Yes, like, and like Liam Clifford, like the fact that he did not play on Saturday. I mean, when's the next step come? Where does it come?
Yeah, I mean, special teams guy, and again, this is somebody who was announced as a starter early in the season. To me, it's just like, I don't know what you do with this receiving core at this point, honestly. And I think that's what has to be so frustrating for this coaching staff, because you saw the problems coming, right? Everybody who follows this team knew what the problems were probably going to be. And yet it's worse than we expected. And some of that is just the health piece, right? Like it's the availability piece with Trey Wallace, where it's, hey, you didn't have him early on in the year, and then you got him back, and now you lost him probably again for who knows how long, right? Depending, we'll see. But to me, that like has to be insanely frustrating for the staff. It has to be really frustrating for the fan base, and I just don't know how you kind of rectify that, because there isn't an easy solution. And I think maybe part of that is back to trying to get your running backs catching more passes, right? We've seen it with Nick Singleton. Because again, he's still one of your most explosive playmakers, even if we haven't seen it for most of this year. He still is. So I think maybe you try some of that. James Franklin was asked today about Daquan Hardy and whether or not he'll be playing offense, and
something you brought up on the last episode, I believe.
I've become, if you're the lead hype conductor of the Dante Cephas train, I guess I am the lead conductor of the Daquan Hardy jet sweep conductor train. So I think, what did you take of his answer? Because I think
there might have been some misinterpretation here.
Yes or no. Yeah,
yeah, but I think he might have misinterpreted the question as if it was like playing him full time on offense, which I don't think is what was meant when it was asked. I do think it's something they should try, just get the ball in his hands. Like, and the reason I think it was misinterpreted, by the way, or potentially might have been, was because James said, you know, you don't want guys like, okay, they're out there only in passing situations, and then you know that they're out there. Okay, they must be passing the ball. I think really the question was more about like five snaps a game, right? Like, not, oh, when he's out there, something's happening. When he's out there, they're always passing. It's actually, oh, when he's out there, they're going to move him and try and get him the ball somehow, which is still a bit of a tell, but guys do, or teams do that all the time in college football and in the NFL too, to try and design some touches for guys that maybe don't have a high snap count.
I just pulled up the quote, and one of the things James Franklin said, he said, it's not something you can just say, okay, this week we're going to make this guy an offensive player. If you do that, you're probably just going to use him on the pass plays, and everybody knows he's in for just the pass play. You lose some of that. So it's more complex than that. We have guys on defense that just play defense and have missed assignments. We have guys on offense that just play offense and have missed assignments, and that's limiting their ability to play more, too many missed assignments. When you do both, meaning playing both sides of the ball, that magnifies it, and that's something you have to be working on more than just after the returns, after he returns a punt for a touchdown. So, yeah, I guess I can see what you're saying about the misinterpretation there, because to me it was just like a really kind of long way to dance around the answer.
Yeah.
Because I absolutely think they need to do it, and I think it's like, you know what? And he even said in his opening statement when he was shouting out the players of the game, he said like Daquan Hardy is a difference maker for us right now. I mean,
get the guy the ball.
Yeah, and I mean, I could see if we were sitting here saying, oh yeah, like who are they going to take off the field because the receiving core is so deep, but like, see, yeah, you laugh, like that's not the conversation we're having, right? We did make it through today with zero questions and zero answers and zero shout outs about a potential Bo Prabula package.
Yes.
Which means we'll probably, if ever we see this thing, we're probably not going to see it till Michigan week at this point. So we did. I wanted to acknowledge that because I know that is one of your favorite when it comes to getting guys on and off the field.
Yeah, take your star quarterback off the field. It's always
but that's not the plan, though. That is what he said on the radio show. It is not the Bo Prabula package that we've never seen that may or may not exist, but apparently exists every week in practice, at least, that package is supposed to get both Drew Aller and Bo Prabula on the field at the same time.
Which would be interesting, and listen, given the design of some of their trick plays this year, which we pretty much exclusively saw against Ohio State, I don't think should inspire much confidence that whatever happens is going to, like, I don't think at the end of that play we're all going to be going, wow, what a great idea. It's probably like, I don't know what just happened or why it happened.
You know what would be the absolute, like, the funniest outcome for me for this is if they go to this Bo Prabula package and, like, it leads to a touchdown right away against Michigan. Like, that would be absolutely – because then it would be, like – and, again, I don't think this is going to happen, but I just think it would be absolutely hilarious if, like, we've heard about this thing since the spring, and, like, we kind of keep hearing little bits and pieces more about it.
I think the funniest outcome is them doing something like they did against Ohio State, at least like a throwaway. It's like, well, there goes that.
Yeah, like this whole, the two-point the time try.
To develop this package, and it's like, well, that was not creative.
It does, tell you what, it does make me wonder, and I, a few years ago when Penn State played Villanova, I spent a good portion of that week with that coaching staff. And I tell you what, it was so eye-opening just in terms of when you're in a building and how many hours coaches spend scheming and thinking and overthinking and rethinking and sleeping on ideas. And then it gets
overthinking
to the game,
again.
And overthinking again. And then it gets to the game and it's like, yeah, actually, like, we never ran that play because that happened the Villanova week. They actually let me name a play and they had this play that they were going to run. And man, I was so invested in that game just because you see all the work that they put in and you're like, man, like this team has no shot. How are they going to do it? And then they got down around the goal line and decided to save my play for later in the season. And then they apologized to me afterward for not running it.
I think you need to circle back and find out if they ever ran the play. I think
that's... I probably should have. I should have said, like, just let me know when you run this.
Yes.
But to me, like, I just wonder how much time has this coaching staff spent? Like, how much time has Mike Yurcich spent thinking about this Bo Prabula package?
That has never
probably
been
an insane amount, right? Like, and that's, I mean, that's
probably never getting run either.
Yeah, like, I just, to me, that is one of the craziest things about this sport, in any sport, but just the amount of time of things that people spend on stuff that we will never see, right? And so maybe advocating for Daquan Hardy is going to lose some people some nights of sleep in that building. But
or maybe it'll lead to them not using it now that it's been put into the public. That it
because I suggested it, absolutely not. If it was in consideration, eliminate it.
Yeah. There was another injury that James discussed today. But just one more thing before we start talking about the Maryland game. It leads us into the Maryland game, really. Caden Wallace, James said he expects Wallace to be available on Saturday. He said, even though that's the case, Drew Shelton will play and they're going to need Drew Shelton, which I think is really, really interesting, right? I think it's a clear sign that Drew Shelton is at the very least reigniting the competition that existed prior to the season and potentially has a chance to overtake Caden Wallace. I thought Drew Shelton played well on Saturday. And I will be curious to see how much, like, how this rotation works out, right? Like, we know that Caden Wallace has practiced at guard. We know that, you know, based on what I've seen, Venga Ioane has kind of struggled at guard a little bit. I'll be curious to see if maybe this is just, is it Drew Shelton just being in for Caden Wallace, or is it Drew Shelton goes in at right tackle and Caden Wallace is playing some left guard? Like, is this multiple pieces shifting, or is it just like an outright replacement at times for Wallace?
Well, and my question with that, John, then, and again, I don't expect we're going to get this answered, but what does it then look like Michigan week, right? Is this just because you're playing Maryland and you've got Michigan State and you've got Rutgers and you're looking toward the future here with one of your, you know, your future tackle, which again, presumably Shelton's going to switch to the left side next year where he's most comfortable at. Yes. And so
I'd be surprised if he wasn't the starting left tackle next year.
Yes. Like to me, that's where this thing is absolutely trending and heading. So then I guess who's your right tackle next year?
I haven't checked the portal recently, but
I think it's going to have to be some of the, I would think one of the younger guys, in there, but I do think like down the stretch here, I'm very curious how they manage some of this. Because you've got Olu Fashanu to take into consideration and his health for the NFL. And you've got three out of the next four opponents who are severely undermatched for Penn State. So I do think like this is one of those games where you probably start to see some of that. But will it look the same against Michigan? I'm not so sure about that. But I am very curious because that, again, like what do we look for when it comes to Rutgers and Michigan State week? To me, that's going to be some of those things and starting to see the future of that line.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if they can start to get some of those blowouts, that would help get guys reps. I think you mentioned the young guys. Javen Williams, mm-hmm. to me, if of any of those guys, I would bet he has the best chance to be the right tackle. But I tend to think, like, for as good of an athlete as he is, he might be a guard long term, though. Like, do you want to kind of do the same dance that we saw with Caden Wallace, right, where he got to Penn State, it was like, he's probably better at guard, but he can play right tackle, so that's fine. And then he plays right tackle forever, and it never feels like he's fully maximized or fully optimized there.
And that was kind of that's what they did in the spring, right? They had Williams and Birchmeyer both at tackle, and they said, if it doesn't go well, we'll shift them back inside. And that's kind of, again, like, you talk about guys for the future. Like, there's so much invested in this offensive line, and the interior of this line should be better long-term because of how they've recruited. But yeah, that to me, that's going to be, we're going to have to start digging into the future depth charts here pretty soon. Because once we hit November, man, all bets are off.
Well, and once, like, if the Michigan game doesn't go well, that becomes like, mm-hmm. it's like, well, the playoffs out of reach. Like, you know, then you start looking at 2024 and how they can try and make the playoff then when it expands to 12 teams. Which I think, by the way, will schedule. Be another. Yeah, right. But I think that'll be another interesting wrinkle to tonight's College Football Playoff rankings release. Mm-hmm. Don't want to discuss it too much because this will be out after it comes out. But I think, you know, Penn State's standing will prove like, hey, if once this expands to 12, Penn State will be in it pretty regularly, right? Because for all of the complaints about them, they're probably going to be like,
right,
by the end of the regular season, like ninth.
Right? Yeah, they're ninth in the AP poll right now. But of course, that stops mattering once tonight hits in the playoff rankings.
Yes.
I will say I did see just perusing some of the bowl projections this week. The one that seems to be popping up a good bit right now, John, is Penn State heading back to the Citrus Bowl. Thoughts on that?
Yikes. I don't know if that's baking in like a Michigan foregone conclusion loss or what have you there.
I think it's baking in that and then baking in the fact that the Big Ten won't get two teams into the playoff, I think is how they come to that. Because otherwise it's you've got New Year's Six games in consideration, but to fall out of that is.
Which honestly, like there's a lot is going to change in the next month. Like, who knows? Michigan might be like 8-4. That's not going to happen, but you never know.
I'm kidding.
It was a joke.
Michigan people are now going to come after you. You're going to be hated by Ohio State and Michigan fans.
That one was a pretty blatant joke. They're probably going to be undefeated if we're being honest. But like either them or Ohio State, I assume will have one loss, which and the other will be undefeated. And if that's the case, like there's a pretty good argument that they should both be in the playoff. Which would open up the Cotton Bowl, which I think is what we're all rooting for at this point.
Me a good Cotton Bowl trip. Yeah. I think Peach Bowl is still out there. Yep. Here we go, John, because I am a sick individual. I've just looked it up. The Citrus Bowl is now sponsored by Cheez-Its. So that's like, that gets them some favor. Cause that to me means like, we're just going to be eating Cheez-Its on New Year's Day. And they do have the bowl projections on here on the actual Cheez-It CitrusBowl.com. And it is Action Network. So Brett McMurphy has Penn State potentially playing Ole Miss. 247 also has Penn State potentially playing Ole Miss.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, Penn State versus Lane Kiffin. Yeah, give me that. Not on here, but that's also what we were projecting at The Athletic. Again, it's week 9. We will see what the heck all of this means. But John, it could mean you and I in Orlando New Year's Day, because it's back to New Year's Day, the Citrus Bowl. Man, that stadium that they play, I believe if it's still at Camping World Stadium, I'm not sure if it still is, but that stadium is just a dive. I've been there many times, and usually the Under Armour game is there.
As soon as this podcast ends, I will be looking up the Orlando Magic schedule to see if we can sneak in an NBA game.
You know what? I looked at the Atlanta Hawks schedule for us in case it would be the Peach Bowl. Ooh. I looked at that. They play the Kings at home the night before the
game. There we go. And we got to check, you know, if it's Scott Bowl, we got to check when the Mavs play. This is the kind of planning that you can only get from the two of us, trying to figure out which NBA games we're going to get to go to for a bowl week. But no, I think, like, you know, look ahead as we will, like, if they don't beat Maryland this week, everything goes out the window. Like, this is a Maryland team that is kind of, I don't want to say kind of, they're pretty bad right now. They've lost 3 straight. Like, they started 5-0. It's a cycle. We see it every year with Maryland. They start really well, don't necessarily play a ton of good teams. This year, they beat Towson, Charlotte, Virginia, Michigan State, and Indiana. 5 teams that are bad at football currently. And then 5-0, a little bit of excitement. Talia Tungavailoa is looking good. Like, looks like the offense could be pretty explosive. Caden Prather's looking good. Lose to Ohio State by 20, although that game was close early. And, you know, they stayed with them a good bit. Lose to Illinois at home, not great. And then lose to Northwestern on the road, which Penn State spent about a quarter and a half trying to do on its own earlier this year. I don't think this is going to be all that close. I think Tungavailoa could present some issues and Prather could present some issues. This is a chance for Penn State to get right offensively. I feel like I say this every single week. Like, it is another chance to get right. Like, this is their opportunity to show that they can do something on offense. But I think this defense is not going to be, like, you know, intimidate. I think it's going to be a bounce back for the defense specifically after not playing particularly well against Indiana. I think they should have a pretty good game against Maryland.
Yeah, I will say, John, for as many feathers as you've ruffled among some of the Ohio State fans, I had ruffled some feathers among the Maryland fans this preseason, and I was unaware. I was doing like a projections piece at The Athletic, and they were very high on their hopes for Maryland this season. They were very optimistic, and I was like, they might not even win 6 games. Who knows? Boy, did I hear it. They came at me full throttle, and rightfully so, because, you know, they were very high.
Well, here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. Like, they're 5-3. They're 5-3 right now. They are, like, SP Plus has them as a pretty good team. 44th in offense, 31st in defense. I still don't think, like, that offense is not going to, should not anyway, scare Penn State's defense. And if it does, then Penn State's, like, cooked, right? Like, this season's completely done. But the
forget about the Cheez-It Bowl. We've got bigger issues. Yeah.
Yeah, we got to find different cities with NBA teams to potentially. We might be going to like a Pistons game at the City Bowl at that point. But they play Penn State obviously this weekend. They go to Nebraska, and Nebraska has a chance to make the Big Ten title game, which is now. Mm-hmm. Now that I've been robbed of my Ference related joy, I will be enjoying some Nebraska potentially in the Big Ten title game. Then it's Michigan at home, and then you go on the road against Rutgers for essentially, if they lose these next 3, for bowl eligibility. And, like, I don't know. I don't know that 6 wins is a given. I think they probably end up getting it. But, yeah, this is not exactly a Maryland team that should be overly intimidating for Penn State. Speaking of Rutgers, by the way, them being 6-2 is I mean, good for them. Like, this is – I did not see this coming. Also not a schedule that's easy. Ohio State, Iowa, Penn State close the year before Maryland. Yeah.
The Maryland thing is just always so perplexing, because you look at it, you say they're positioned really well based off of location, geography, right? For recruits, you should be able to get a lot of talent, right? Caden Prather is from Maryland. Talia Tungavailoa, he and I had quite a conversation.
Yes.
At Big Ten Media Days, right? Because no one was around this guy. So I went to him and started talking to him. And I essentially was like, why the hell are you still here? Right? Like, why would you come back to Maryland? And he told me that he had an offer from an SEC program for $1.5 million to play elsewhere. And the sports information director was standing right there and did not try to stop him. Just let him go. I was like, oh my God, he's been really honest. The thing went viral and then I got aggregated to death. But to me, yeah, it was a really absolutely got aggregated to death. To me, the point was really, really interesting. It was because he believed in this team, right? And here's somebody who has a hell of a lot of potential. This was somebody coming into the preseason. We said, this is going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the Big Ten. They surrounded him with a little bit of help. But it just, it has never all come together for this program. And I think Josh Gattis is a really interesting piece to this as well. When he became the offensive coordinator in the spring. And so you look at that and you say, okay, Gattis, I believe, is 39 now. When he was at Penn State, he was viewed as kind of a, you know, the young up and comer, then leaves, goes to Alabama, Michigan, and then Miami. Was at Miami for a hot second.
Yeah. For, I think, a year.
Yeah.
A lot of stops in a short amount of time.
Very many stops. And so I think too, like, again, we've seen it time and time again for Maryland. This is a game they will get up for, right? This is at College Park, 3:30 kick. So, God, we changed the clocks this weekend, John. So it's going to be dark by like 5:00.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know this.
Sunday's clock change day. My mom reminded me of that. And
even better reason for me to leave Saturday night then, as far as I'm concerned.
Sounds like a you choice. I will be getting my full sleep. It is a me choice. Because I thought the clock change weekend was Michigan weekend, but then I looked and I was wrong. So yeah, fall back this weekend. So, but this is a game that they will absolutely get up for. This in many ways will make their season if they can pull off an upset.
Oh, if they win and it gets them bowl eligibility too in the process, when again, it's not a guarantee at this point, that would be huge for them.
And keep in mind, Penn State has put up, you know, those billboards throughout various regions where they've gotten recruits. So I think these are things that if you're Mike Locksley, if you're Josh Gattis, if you're Maryland players, you don't forget these types of things, right? You can say whatever you want to say to us publicly this week, but you remember those kinds of things. Now, the other one, and we do not know, we'll hopefully know more Wednesday night, Chop Robinson. His potential return to his original school, to Maryland. We are unsure if he's going to play, where he's at health-wise. Haven't seen him since the Ohio State game. So that, I think, absolutely will be asked about Wednesday. We'll be keeping eyes out for him.
Was not asked about today. Again, a guy that we'll see on Wednesday if he's practicing. If he's not, it's probably a telltale sign. If he is, you know, it probably could go either way because concussion protocols are not, you know, things are not always linear there, but I do think like that's something that James will get asked about after practice Wednesday.
Yeah, so that's definitely on the horizon. I haven't looked ahead, John, at the weather. I'm just assuming it's going to be nice. I could be totally wrong. I mean, it certainly got cold here in a hurry.
You're talking to the wrong guy.
In State College. I'm sure you'll just be wearing a hoodie that James Franklin will then want to buy one of those. Just
that's
like
right.
That.
I'll be wearing a hoodie and jeans, and that'll probably be it because it's generally what I wear to these types of things. Although, hoodie, jeans, you know, press conference, you put some joggers on, I put some Jordans on and went on my way this morning.
Now, let's see, College Park. Let's see.
I'm scared to hear this. I have not packed yet, obviously, because I'll be packing like Friday afternoon right before I leave.
It looks like it is going to be, oh, wow. Wow, you're going to like this, John. This is good. Saturday, 66 and sunny.
Oh, okay.
Only maybe a 2% chance of rain.
Maybe a hoodie and a nicer pair of shorts then. That could be on the table for this weekend, which is always a plus.
Actually, I think what should happen is you should dress just like James Franklin this week. Just some khakis.
I'll show up in a full suit and then change into a polo and khakis. No,
full suit,
the pressure
take a lap around the field.
Yeah, and then go up and change. Yeah.
Actually, I think that's what needs to happen.
This won't surprise anyone who knows me. I don't really do suits. Like, it's usually a hoodie. Like, this is as good as it's going to get. I think I've worn a hoodie on. I don't even think I've worn like a short sleeve shirt or anything. I'm pretty sure I've had a hoodie on for every single one of these shows. And that will likely be the case for the foreseeable future. I am who I am.
But
and like I am who I am.
A multimillionaire wants to dress like you, John.
Listen, I'm just saying.
That's probably the nicest, most flattering thing the head coach has probably ever said to you.
That's up there. He's commented on my shoes a few times, which again is not overly surprising given I've said on here how much
lobbying out I spend on
shoes. to me specifically for some reason. Oh yeah. But this Maryland team is who it is, right? Like, I don't think there's any reason to think this is going to go any other way than one this weekend. And I can start us off here. Mm-hmm. I've got Penn State winning 31-17. Spread last I checked was 11. Oh no, did you also pick 31-17?
Keep going.
My
evidence right here. Make sure
I was going to say, listen,
31-17.
I also have it. I have it written down here, like just right at the beginning of the episode, right there, my horrible handwriting. This is
great.
Penn State defense that's right. Penn State defense should be able to do what he needs to do this weekend. Maybe Maryland hits on a big play because Caden Prather's really good, because Tonga Bailoa is good. But I think, you know, the offense will be able to do enough in the running game to get things going, you know, hopefully for Penn State's sake. Open things up in the passing game. We talked about after Indiana, like that needed to be a turning point. Well, this is time to find out, right? If it really was. I think Penn State ends up winning this one 31-17 and probably pretty, you know, stress-free game if I had to guess. Now, I also said 49-0 last week and it did not go that way. So what do I know?
Yeah, I'm done saying that you guys are going to have a stress-free Saturday because I still feel
that's
bad
our
about
bad.
That.
Yeah,
we were like, oh, it's going to be stress-free. Yeah, no, I have no idea what you're
stressful
for
us, too. I almost had to rewrite stories. That's not fun.
Oh, yeah, I was down on the field Saturday, and we were, like, getting a running story of, like, if Indiana pulls the upset, like, we need to pivot, and I did not write it that way. It was not a good scene.
My delightful editor, Josh Moyer, was ready. Former Penn State beat writer was fully prepared to help me out if that was the case. And for that, I am extremely
It was very much touch and go. But yes, I am also predicting 31-17 Penn State. John and I did not talk about this at all. But I'm with you in terms of, does anything change with the explosive element of this offense? Because it is truly... truly, truly now or never, right? Because even if you come out and you're slinging it against Rutgers and Michigan State, no one will care, right? Like that might sound really harsh, and I'm sure some of you will care, but most people won't. Like, this is the tune-up for the chance to save your season next week. Got to figure it out. And I think the other thing for Penn State, you want to come out of this game, you want to come out of every game as healthy as possible, but if you are, and we don't know this, but if you are kind of on the fringe with a guy like a Chop Robinson, probably don't need to play him this week as much as I'm sure he'd love to. Same thing. Like, you look at rep counts, Olu Fashanu has played a lot of football now here the last few weeks. I don't think you need him to be playing late in the game, right? Because you need him more so next week than you do this week. And again, you want to develop Drew Shelton and continue to work on the depth there. Like, let's see. I am also curious what this travel roster looks like, because we are at that point. We saw Jameel Lyons play Saturday, so that was the fourth game he played in, so he could potentially burn his red shirt this weekend. So that's kind of all that other stuff. And I got into some of more of the nitty-gritty and some of those details on The Athletic and a few of my stories. So we've got that stuff going on. John, any last parting thoughts before you and I hit the road later this week for Maryland?
No, I think that's it. I think Penn State, I mean, they're not going to get caught looking ahead, I don't think. I don't think that's ever really been an issue. If anything, they get caught
more
looking behind.
More so looking behind, yeah.
Yeah, and they kind of overcame that. And if that's not going to be an issue, they should win pretty easily. So this is a chance to kind of right the ship. And then next week's a week, right? Like, it's... so what it all comes down to, and I think we'll find out a little bit of info tonight with the playoff rankings and everything about where exactly they stand, what they can do. I think, and we're recording before it airs, so people will know if this is true or not. I think Ohio State's going to be the number one team in the country, which
interesting. Will help Penn State. I would say Georgia.
I don't think the committee will like the resume there. To be clear, I don't necessarily think Ohio State is the number one team in the country, but I think they will be wins over Penn State and Notre Dame. And I think part of that, like, so there's kind of a circular logic with these things, right? Is like, okay, to have Ohio State as number one, you have to also think Penn State's good. So maybe Penn State comes in at like 8 or seven. You know what I mean? Because like, because they're elevated, because okay, their only loss is a road loss, a one possession game to Ohio State. You know, they can, you can, you have to use the circular logic with all these things where you want to talk.
Because it always is interesting to hear what the committee, because they usually do a conference call, and usually I'll hop on and I'll be like, well, what do you think about Penn State? And like, what is their best win right now, John?
Iowa. Like, and I mean, admittedly, like that's a really good Iowa defense. And they did score 31. Sure. Like, so like there's, that's a real like win, right? But at this point, like Iowa's just kind of a mess, and I don't think it's going to get the credit that maybe it deserves. West Virginia is like good. They would have one loss, I think, if not for, or two losses, if not for,
I think, Iowa and West Virginia are the two that you kind of hang your hat on right now.
Yeah, but they have, like, it's not like they're like Northwestern is 4-4 somehow. Shout out to that coaching staff for somehow getting them to four wins. I don't think, like, well, their head coach, not the whole coaching staff, for obvious reasons.
Parts of staff that they still have there, yes.
Yeah. The, but I, like, they're 4-4. Like, that's not, it's not like a good win or anything, but it's not like, oh, you just ran over Indiana. If anything, the barely beating Indiana is more harmful than any, you know, of the other stuff. But no, it's going to be interesting. That is probably, I don't want to get too deep into the weeds since that happens in like an hour and this will be up after that point. But if you want, if you enjoyed listening today, please rate, review, subscribe. As I mentioned earlier, it's always helping us out on YouTube, on Apple Podcasts. Follow Audrey on Twitter at oddsnyder4. Follow her on, with, follow her writing, excuse me, on The Athletic. Follow me at John Sauber on Twitter. Follow my stuff at centerdaily.com. Thank you for tuning in. Have a great day.